2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Today on First Lady and Friends, I had a great conversation with Curtis Bennett. He's with Just Serve. He's lived an amazing life, has some great experiences, but really talked about the stories that mean the most to him and how service is such a big part of our lives here in Utah. Can't wait for you to take a listen. Let's get proximate. Welcome back to First Lady and Friends. Today on the show, we have Curtis Bennett with Just Serve. So happy to have you here.
Thank you very much. It's a privilege to be here.
Yeah, we've been talking about service a lot, and there's a lot of service organizations in the state, but we're gonna talk about Just Serve and the amazing things, but lots of other things. You do lots of other things. And before we get to all of that, let's just talk about you. Where'd you grow up and a little bit about your story, your family? Tell us about Curtis Bennett.
It's an incredibly boring story, but before I get to that, I want to say one thing, and I'll answer the question.
Yes.
That is, I just applaud you for everything you're doing with Show Up Utah. It is a magnificent program and effort, initiative, and the kindness and the goodness and the service that's going on throughout the state is just laudable. So congratulations.
You.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you so much.
I grew up in Mesa, Arizona, and I'll never go back. It is way too hot. And my wife and I decided that a long time ago. It was a great place to grow up and really loved it there. We've got lots of family there, but we like Salt Lake City, and I think our plan is we'll stay. But that's where I grew up.
Mm, my grandparents actually grew up in Mesa, or not in Mesa. That's where they lived. That was their snowbird home. They lived there when I was growing up. They had a little place kind of down there by the LDS temple. Mm-hmm. And then, but they grew up in Snowflake area.
Yeah, my mother lives there, and I have family that lives in Snowflake. Snowflake's
We're
also
probably
a great community.
Related.
Maybe so. Maybe so. I'm a transplant, though, to Arizona from Ohio. So
oh.
I call it home because that's where I spent most of my informative years.
Mm. So what brought your parents from Ohio?
So a divorce.
Mm.
Yeah. And so my mother I don't know what happened to her. She got an adventurous spirit. She had four children, raising them all on her own. We were all very young. And she got an adventurous spirit and said to her parents, I want to move from Cleveland, Ohio to Mesa, Arizona. She saw a Chamber of Commerce flyer, thought it would be really cool to live out west where all the cowboys and Indians are. And she thought it'd be really great. And so she sold everything. We sold everything we had. We were allowed to take one toy that was our favorite, and we loaded it all up into a 1964 Chevy Impala and took 2.5 weeks to make a 5-day trip across the country.
Wow.
Yeah.
Basically Route 66.
Yeah. Stopped at every alligator farm and rubber band ball and world's largest skillet and everything else along the way.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's
yeah,
incredible.
Yeah.
What a brave woman.
She was. Yeah. Some said she was crazy, but she was brave. And by the time we got to Mesa, we only had $20 to our name, and she made it work. She made it work.
Oh, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So growing up, was you and your siblings,
mm-hmm.
and your mom, and when you got to Mesa, what did she go into? How did she figure things out?
So the first few months, we actually lived in a hotel because we didn't have any place to go, and she actually went to the purveyor of the hotel, the owner of the hotel, and told him after a couple of days that she didn't have any money. And so he let us stay there. And for the first few months, we painted rooms, and he gave us room and board. And then she found a job as a secretary for a school district. And it wasn't easy. It was very hard for a single mom to raise four kids. And she went into nursing. And even though she had a career in nursing, it was really hard to make ends meet with four small children. And if it wasn't for the assistance of some really wonderful people and welfare assistance, we wouldn't have never made it, ever. Good people, good people in Mesa that I just highly regard and revere as my heroes. So,
yeah. Wow. That's a really cool story. And I think one that probably taught you a lot of things and made you who you are. And
it did. When I was 12 years old, a religious leader came to me and he said, "Curtis, I need a strong back and a weak mind, and you're my man." And he put me to work, and he wanted me to learn how to work hard. And there were days that I loved to hate him, and other days I hated to love him. But he just worked me hard, but taught me the value of work. And I'm really grateful to him for doing so.
That's amazing. So you're finishing your school there, and then what? You're in Mesa until.
So I was in the after I got married, I'd like to say I married the woman of my dreams, but I never had dreams that good. We got married and we had a few kids, and then we took a job in the Kansas City area and moved to Kansas City for about 9 years. Loved the Midwest, good people there. And then took a 3-year hiatus to go to Chile, and then we came home to Kansas City. And then I accepted a position here with O.C. Tanner and was their vice president of retail operations and ran their stores here. And that's why we moved to Salt Lake City. And we really, really, really love it here. We love this four seasons. We love the quality of life. We love the people. We love the whole environment. Our kids have thrived here. So,
Tell me about Chile, going to Chile. I mean, how was it? I mean, it's probably, did you have children when you moved there? So mm-hmm. How was that?
So our oldest at the time was 17 years old, and our youngest was 3. And when the word came that we were going to be going to Chile, they were all very excited. My children all have something of an adventurous spirit. And they
probably
were all,
from grandma.
Probably from grandma. Yeah, probably from grandma. That's a good thought. And they were excited about the idea of going to another country, learning another culture, learning another language. And when we got to Chile, we were able to put them into a school that was really just stellar. Great teachers. International school system is really quite impressive. It's robust. And the teachers that are there because they want to be there, and they're quite adventurous themselves, and they've got a lot of great ideas. And so our children just thrive there. And kids got to play sports that you wouldn't normally get to play in the United States. I had a son who was on the national cricket team and another son who was on a rugby team. And, you know, they got to do things they wouldn't have normally been able to do there in Chile. And to get to know the people there was a great blessing for us, and it was a lot of fun.
I always, you know, I'm a little envious of those, you know, those experiences of living with your family out of the country, because mm-hmm. I think it just teaches people so much. We've tried to give our kids some out of the country experiences on their own, just in different ways, but not anything like that permanent placement there, sort of for that many years.
And they all learned Spanish, and it was good that they learned that language. And when we were able to go out among the people, we always made it a point to bring them with us so that they could really see what was going on in the communities and not just see from their home or from their school. It was a great experience for all of them, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen in their lives the repercussions of that mm-hmm. that experience. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they've, you know, Spanish has probably come in real handy for them.
Very much so. And then when one of our sons wanted to go teach English in China, you know, the whole idea of going to another country and doing that was no big deal for him. For his wife, it was, you know, this monumental decision. And I applaud them both for making that decision. They live in China for 6 months. But now I have a daughter who lives in Germany. And one of the things that she likes to do while she's in Germany, her husband's in the U.S. Army, she makes it a point to take her children to go see every single country they can go to. And we've got a little 5-year-old granddaughter who's got 20 plus stamps on her passport. I can't even believe that. So
Well, and in Europe, everything's a little, you know, pretty accessible. I have a friend who just, I think they've just moved back. Her husband's a Canadian citizen and actually works for the Canadian government and was stationed in Latvia for the last several years. And I just follow her on Instagram and I just see same thing. She has two little kids and every weekend it seems like they were in a different country and having experiences with their kids, which is powerful.
It is fun for them and they've learned a lot.
Yeah. And I think I'm guessing that your kids, because of that experience and your family has looked at service and volunteerism in a different way as a result.
You know, that's a great statement. And I love my kids. I love them all. I believe I hit the proverbial jackpot when it comes to children. And I feel the same way when it comes to all of our in-laws. And then even more so with our grandchildren. We love them more, kids. And but you're right. Our children have a very kind heart and a kind spirit. And they're quick to jump in and they want to do what they can to be of service to, you know, their fellow man. And I have a son, when he came home from a religious mission, LDS mission in Romania, he was connected with a orphanage there. And he decided on his own he wanted to do a skateboarding excursion from Santa Rosa, California to San Diego to raise money for this orphanage. He raised about $10,000, if I remember right. But he rode a skateboard all the way down the Pacific Coast Highway from Santa Rosa to San Diego, 650 miles, and raised money all along the way. It was really, really cool. Dangerous, fun, adventurous, hair-raising sometimes, but I applaud him. And all my kids are like that. So
That's incredible. Yeah. Love it. So let's talk a little bit about your professional journey. So you mm-hmm. went from... you were in OC Tanner, or you went to Chile, and then you were at OC Tanner. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that, and then maybe the transition that you've made since then.
So when we came here to Salt Lake City, we came to go work for that phenomenal company, OC Tanner, which is an icon, seminal company here in Utah. And Obert Clark Tanner was truly one of the great byproducts of this state, and the company as a whole is a phenomenal company and wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people. When the time came for us to go, I was at a crossroads. Did I want to continue selling Rolex watches, or did I want to do something really cool? And so an opportunity was provided to me. I was asked by a dear friend to go talk to a charitable organization called Cause for Hope. And they had operations in 14 different countries, mostly throughout Latin America. And I spoke Spanish, so I thought, let's give it a shot. And when I went to go work with them, they had an incredible model of mentoring and helping people to pull themselves out of poverty into sustainable self-reliance. And it was a truly amazing adventure. And then we got tapped to go again out of country, and my wife and I went to Mexico City and lived there for a couple of years. And we were responsible for the Missionary Training Center there in Mexico City. And then when we came home, I wanted to go back into this charitable initiative and went to work for Mentors International. Mentors International has been in existence in Utah. It's a Utah company. And they've been in existence, I think, for about 33 or 34 years now and have done amazing work throughout the Philippines, throughout Latin America, Nepal, Ghana, throughout the world. And again, microloans, but mentoring to help people get to the points of sustainable self-reliance. And I have 1,000 stories I could tell of some of the most amazing things that people have been able to accomplish through the efforts of really good people. And even though there's this really great local team that is here in Salt Lake City doing the great work that they're doing currently, there are 250 to 400 mentors worldwide that are boots on the ground working with their people day in, day out, and helping them pull themselves out of, you know, systemic and multi-generational poverty. It's really cool stuff.
Mm. There's so much. The more I learn about nonprofit work and being in this for the little while that I have, I love the idea of mentors because it always comes back to that. Everything mm-hmm. that I talk to organizations, we talk to groups and vulnerable people, and what you know, obviously funds, resources, all the things that people need, you know, to be seen, to be lifted up in different ways. But it always circles back around to mentorship and how crucial that is. So,
without a doubt, if every one of us were to go back and analyze our lives, we'd be able to identify, if we're honest with ourselves, the really great mentors of our lives who helped us to be able to go from one level to the next. The beauty about what Mentors International is doing is, although they may give a microloan to an individual or to a family, it comes with the mentor who's going to walk by their side for 6 months to a year to 18 months, however long it takes for them to be able to not only satisfy the loan, but to be able to learn the skills of self-reliance so that they can pull themselves out. It's not a matter of self-reliance. It's a matter of sustainable self-reliance. Mm-hmm. The key is, do they become self-reliant today, and will they be in 6 months from now and in 2 years from now? And if they're not learning the skills, and if they don't have a mentor to help them, it's going to be far, far more difficult for them to be able to achieve those levels to break free, and usually from those multi-generational cycles of poverty.
So. Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, there's so much that goes into it with governments and different things like that, or that, mm-hmm. you know, you have to overcome, but that mentorship piece is really important. I want to get into our work together at Just Serve, and I'll do mm-hmm. that when we come right back.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on kslpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back here on First Lady and Friends with Curtis Bennett with Just Serve. So we were talking off mic a little bit, and you were sharing a story. And before we move on to Just Serve, I want to go back to this idea of microloans. And I want you to, first of all, explain what a microloan is with the volunteers, and what your Mentors International, talk a little bit what the microloan is, and then tell us the story that you just told me.
So microloan is a very small loan. Usually they're $100 or less. And for the most part, they're to help seed a small micro business. And unfortunately, a lot of these countries with extortion, a lot of different things, and even with employment, you can get people who go to work and they'll work for long periods of time and not get paid. So they don't trust the system. So the levels of entrepreneurship are very high because they know they can trust themselves. So they'd really like to start their own business. And so a small loan to help them seed their business. And the challenge that you get with microloans is not getting people to live from one microloan to another, to another, to another, to another. You want to get them out. And so that's the purpose of the mentor, to help them learn the skills that they need so they can get out and they can be on their own. So I was telling you this story, and I showed you this picture. This is one of my favorite stories of all time. And I said, I've got 1,000 stories I could tell, but I just love this story. And I wish our listeners could see this picture, because this is a beautiful, beautiful family. But this sweet little gal, she lost her husband due to a work-related accident. He was electrocuted and killed. The company felt bad about it, so they gave her $25 and said, we're sorry. And she was left, you know, holding the bag with these four children. And she lived in a tiny little home with just one bedroom, and they were all sharing the bedroom, barely making on it about $40 to $50 per month. This is in Peru, in Lima. And just this wonderful woman who was not afraid of hard work, not afraid to work hard. So her goal in life was to be able to get up in the morning and to do what she had to do, but she wanted to be there when her children left for school, and she wanted to be there when her children came home from school. So she decided that she was going to sell freshly freshly squeezed juices. So she'd go down to the market early, be back before her kids would get up, get them off to school, and then she had this rickety old cart that she would try to wheel out as far out as she could. But what she was doing is she was selling juices in her poor neighborhood. And there was no money in that poor neighborhood to buy the juices, so she was really failing. So when she met the people at Mentors International, they sat down, assessed, looked at what she was trying to do, and they asked, what do you need? She says, I need a bike. And I don't know if you've seen those three-wheel bikes in some of the Latin American countries. That's all she wanted. She said, well, how much do you need? And she said, for $65, I can get a bike. And so they gave her a loan for $65. She needed to pay it back within a year. Very, very, very tiny interest rates. But and the reason for the interest is because people have to value what they're being given, okay? And so it's not the interest rate. It's just the fact that they need to value what they're given. So she bought this three-wheel bike, and she put all her equipment on it. She was able to get to the market easier, get back easier. But then she was able to wheel out into the downtown area of her town, of her city, and to be able to set up shop and to be able to sell to business people, to passersby. And she went from $40 to $50 a month within relatively short amount of time. She went to $300 a month and radically changed her lifestyle, paid the loan back way early, and was able to pull herself out of that. And this has been some time now, and I've been able to do some follow-up with this family. They've done really wonderfully well. And again, this gal was not afraid. She was not afraid to work hard. She just wanted to be there for her kids more than anything else. Mm.
It's stories like that that I think help us to understand the listening to people's needs rather than going in and telling them what we think they need. Mm-hmm. We've tried to think about that with you know, show up with our service organization. What do people need? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that I know it's kind of radical to think about, you know, just actually listening to people and their needs, you know, what their stated needs are.
One of my favorite TED Talks in the whole wide world is entitled, I don't remember, he's in Italian, but it's called If You Want to Help, Shut Up and Listen. It is phenomenal. So I encourage anybody to listen to that. It's really good.
Yeah.
It's exactly right.
Well, and it's interesting, we've done, you know, when Spencer was a lieutenant governor, he worked a lot with the folks that are working on in intergenerational poverty mm-hmm. here in the state. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of stories, you know, we try to figure out, you know, welfare and you know, helping people and how do you do this and child welfare and how do you fix some of these issues and get upstream. And one really incredible moment, I was in a meeting with him and I remember you know, listening to them and just like this family, just like this woman in Peru, if sometimes it's as easy as I just need somebody to help me get my kids off to school in the morning. Like maybe that's all I need. Then I could be to work on time. Then I will have the job that I can. You know, mm-hmm. all the things that fall into place after that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it really is just that simple. And again, listening to what they need instead of saying, oh, well, I'm sure you need this. I'm sure you need, you know, food stamps or blah, blah, blah. You know, all these things. You know, a lot of times it's as easy as, could somebody just come over and get my kiddos to school? You know, that may be it. Then I can stay in my job. Then I can, you know, all the things that come after. But I think it's really important.
Couldn't agree more. Could not agree more. Sometimes we just need to stop and listen. And oftentimes we try to make the solutions far more complicated than what they really are. Usually the solution is far simpler than what we think it is.
Yeah. Yep. And people are willing to work. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of stigma around, mm-hmm. you know, to people. You said she's a hard worker. I think mm-hmm. I would say that the majority of people are.
This woman would have worked me into the ground. She really works hard. So,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love it. And our kids are learning a lot yeah. of lessons from mm-hmm. from a really strong woman mm-hmm. who's yeah. who's looking out for them. Let's talk about Just Serve. Let's just talk about what it is.
Okay.
And what it isn't.
Okay. Just Serve is a magnificent and very robust online platform that allows people who have an interest to serve to find volunteer opportunities. And so whether it's the Tiny Tim's Toys for Tots to the St. Vincent de Paul dining room and dining kitchen.
Which I have to say, okay, going back to Tiny Tim's mm-hmm. Toys for Tots, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. I was in Morocco mm-hmm. We had just had them at our service fair at Thanksgiving Point. And I had talked to him, and I'd seen the cars, the little toys that they were putting together and making there at our event. And not 2 weeks later, I was in Morocco with our Utah National Guard. We went out to this village. It's not even a village. It was kind of out in the nowhere where our National Guard folks had set up a humanitarian center, basically with doctors and dentists and, ultrasound machines and all kinds of, so people could out in this really remote rural area in Morocco could come and get medical care for most of them the first time in their lives. Mm-hmm. And so we're out there in the middle of Morocco and I'm walking around and I'm trying to talk to little kids, and we were having this experience. And I went over to this one tent and she's like, well, I've got all these toys. So if you want to go give these to some of the kids in line. And I picked up this toy and it was
Tiny Tim's.
Uh-huh. And I saw the little stamp and I said, can you believe this? I am here in Morocco and I am handing a little boy a Tiny Tim's little toy. And I'm like,
they do great work.
I watched it happen. Yeah. It was really cool.
Yeah. They do great work. And so, organizations like them are listed on JustServe. We have 154,000 registered users in Utah, just in Utah alone, the most volunteer-prone state in the entire nation. And right now, we probably have close to 1,000 different projects that are available. And whether someone wants to go on site, whether they want to do something at home, whether they want to do something virtually, there's a project virtually for every circumstance and for every age group and for every group, and it's really quite significant. You said it yourself the other day, the way to eliminate some of those hard feelings and challenges and the way to get those to dissipate is to have heart-to-heart experiences with one another. And that's what service does. And the whole purpose behind Just Serve is to try and get us outside of our normal routine, outside of the confines of our neighborhood, so to speak, and to get us to go outside and to be able to serve people within our community that we may not know. And again, I've got 1,000 stories that I could tell you of some of the really great things that are going on. So, for example, during the 9/11 day, which we may or may not talk about, but with the 9/11 day of service, to be able to go to the Bountiful Baptist Church on the 9/11 day of service and to see congregants from that church, congregants from other churches of all denominations, members of the Muslim community, members of the Latin community, and all working shoulder to shoulder to do a project at this Baptist church is incredibly heartwarming. And whatever social divides or political divides or socioeconomic divides just are gone. They dissipate, as you said, and they disappear. And suddenly, everybody has a common objective, and everybody's doing a great work. And the purpose of Just Serve is to give people that opportunity to be able to go out and do projects like that, whether on an individual scale. And I've talked to young people and old who just get on Just Serve and go find a single project for themselves, or your family. And I've spoken to many families who've done that, or if you're a religious group or just a club at school, just go do it.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't think people realize the resource that it is. Mm-hmm. I've told the story probably, but that, I had my sister-in-law who was in charge of a youth group that was traveling down to Bluff down in San Juan County. Mm-hmm. And she said, do you know what we could do? And I literally just got on Just Serve and said, well, here's this, and this, and right. That zip code, and here's some opportunities. And so I don't think people realize how crazy easy it is.
Thank you for saying that, because it is, and I appreciate that. But throughout the entire state, if somebody does a search by their zip code, you can find any number of different projects that are available to do. And there's great satisfaction in getting out there and helping in that particular way. With so much challenge and with all the disagreeing, and we can disagree better, and with all of the anger in the world that's out there, all of that seems to disappear when we're shoulder to shoulder and side by side serving. Whether you're receiving the service or the one giving the service, it's just heartwarming.
Yeah. And I, you know, and I've said this too, but I fully believe that people will either find belonging in hate or they'll find it in really positive ways like service. And yeah. I think serving in our communities, we have to. We're at the point, I think, where that's why Disagree Better is, you know, why we – it's the reason we've started that initiative with mm-hmm. the NGA, because we're just seeing you can't – we can't keep down this path. We can't keep going down this path. It's really destructive to our country, to our families. You know, we're – a lot of us are at the point where we can't even have conversations in our families.
And that is so true. And so I have never been yet that I can think of to a single project where people have been out there working together where an argument ensues, where people get upset at one another. And it's really interesting. So we were down at the Hindu temple here in West Jordan, South Jordan, and I didn't even know it was down there. And there were 95 people there. And they went there to go serve and to clean up on the grounds. But unbeknownst to them, and I don't think they were fully aware of what was going to happen, then they got this tour of the temple, and that was an incredible cultural experience, not only for the adults like me, but for the young kids. It was this incredible experience. And then again, I think mostly unbeknownst to the people that were there, the entire the Hindu community put together a classic Hindu meal for the whole group. And they all went in and they just had this incredible meal. So they went there with the purpose of going to go serve, but they walked out with a cultural experience that was so broad. So it just awakening.
Yeah. No, and it's been my experience too, just on a personal level. When I've sat down with somebody, you know, I have friends that are Muslim. I now have friends that are all kinds of different religious experiences mm-hmm. and backgrounds. I have people, you know, who I know vehemently disagree with me politically, mm-hmm. and I sit down with them, and I just am at the point where I don't hold to those political ideologies quite so tightly, because now I'm seeing this from somebody else's point of view,
right.
And you know, it's so interesting. I had conversations with people that are, you know, while you're serving, while you're talking to people, and you know, at the YWCA, did a project down there, and you know, I'm talking to people that are experiencing things, you know, maybe an unwanted pregnancy or something that's happened, you know, and then I'm starting to see that from somebody else's point of view. I'm starting to see like what that means for that person and how they adjust to this and how they, you know, if it's poverty, if it's not poverty, you know, there's just so many things that people are experiencing that I haven't experienced. And now I can see the world through their eyes. And I just think it's the answer.
So I know you were out there when all the refugees were coming in from Afghanistan, and so were we. And so when you were there and you were talking with them and feeding them and helping them to get settled, and you started to hear some of the absolutely harrowing stories that so many of these people had to live through, it just – It opened your eyes completely to what's going on in the world and the need out there.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's where, you know, I find friendships. I mm-hmm. find joys. It flexes my compassion muscles.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
They're there.
I'm going to use that. Flex my compassion muscles. I'm going to use that.
Sometimes they go dormant and we have to,
yeah,
we have
like
to
that.
Exercise
yeah.
them.
Yeah,
and
I like
so
that.
It's powerful. I don't know anybody that, yeah, like you say, that walks away worse off if they, you know, when they've decided to serve
somebody.
Nobody's
turning over police cars and burning them at a service project.
No. Just, I've yet to see it.
Nope.
So I want to talk more about 9/11 Day of Service and some other things that are coming up. And
perfect.
We'll do that when we come right back. We're back here on First Lady and Friends with Curtis Bennett, Just Serve. We want to talk about 9/11 Day of Service. And, we've talked a little bit about this before in years past, and it's coming up again, 9/11. And just that moment that we all had as a country of really, you know, horrific thing happened, and we had a moment together as a country where we kind of came together,
mm-hmm.
which I don't think has happened really since. And so I think we need, even, you know, the pandemic should have been, but because it was so unique that we actually physically had to be apart, I just think we all became so unmoored
mm-hmm.
that we kind of, not being, again, not being human to human, not being with each other physically, I think it pulled us apart emotionally and in lots of other ways. And we kind of went to our political corners and our political ideologies. And it was, I mean, even in families, everything kind of pulled apart. So I love the idea of 9/11 Day of Service, because instead of remembering the horrors of 9/11, the idea really is to remember that time when we all came together, and let's be like that again without a major disaster, without a major traumatic event happening to us. So talk a little bit about what we're doing there.
So you're spot on. And one of these days, you and I have a discussion over a dinner table with our families and talk about the politics of what could have happened during COVID. But
yes.
the 9/11 Day of Service is exactly what you're talking about. And you and I both had the opportunity to talk with David Payne, who's the founder of the 911day.org foundation. And he lost people, and his co-founder lost people on that fateful day. And the whole purpose of establishing this National Day of Service was to not really memorialize the tragic event, but to remember the great effort that was made by the country as a whole in the aftermath. Crime went down, service went up, everybody was helping one another, we were all engaged together in this tragedy, and we all wanted to be there for one another. And it was amazing to see what happened as a result. So the only two national days of service, federally recognized days of service, or Martin Luther King Day of Service, and then now the 9/11 Day of Service. And it was interesting, the two bill sponsors were Orrin Hatch and Ted Kennedy. So you got two diametrically opposed individuals who came together in a great symbolic way to bring this to fore so that we could have this National Day of Service. And so this opportunity for us on 9/11, yes, is an opportunity for us to honor first responders, honor our veterans, honor the people who did so much to help out on those days and then suffered in the aftermath. But it's also this opportunity for us to show what the American people were willing to do immediately following and just get in there and get the work done and help one another and be of service to one another. And what I really like about this is that now this is, I think, the 22nd anniversary of 9/11 Day, it is. And so now for 20 years, millions upon millions upon millions of service hours have been given because of what happened at 9/11. And one of the things that I really like most about what happens here in Utah is we don't just come out to serve in small groups. We come out in droves. And when you go talk to David Payne, who's the founder of this organization, he says Utah's the poster child for what we want the 9/11 Day of Service to be. So in the last 2 years, what we had, I've been able, privileged to co-chair this 9/11 Day initiative in the state of Utah. This is my last year to be able to do it for the third year. And they're going to give it to somebody better. And but every year we've been able to bring roughly, we were going to be excited if we had 60 or 100 projects. Last year and the year before, we had over 300 projects, 60,000 volunteers, millions of service hours, millions of dollars in economic impact, tens of thousands of hygiene kits and food kits and fleece blankets and socks and blood that was donated. I went up to one of the blood donation places and they said, "We have never been wall to wall, standing room only, that like we have been on this particular day." And it's amazing to watch. whether you're in St. George, or you're up in Logan or Vernal or Wendover, and everywhere in between, you've got these amazing projects going on and people coming together. And as I mentioned about the Baptist Bountiful Church, what's really fun about this whole project, about the 9/11 Day of Service, is watching these diverse groups come together. So you've got, there's 60,000 Muslims in Utah, okay? I think last I heard there were 300,000 Mexican nationals. I used to be the honorary consul of Chile. There are 5,000 or 6,000 Chileans who live here. And you bring all these different groups here together, and they're willing to get together and serve one another and serve side by side. It's really quite inspirational.
Yeah, I don't think people really realize, you know, how powerful this is and how much work goes into this. And how much good can be done even in just one day. We hope there's, you know, I love my friend Pamela Atkinson, who said, you know, fits of charity usually around Christmas time. she, you know, we don't want to always have just fits of charity, but just that this is a way of life. Mm-hmm. And I love that Utah's been recognized as the perfect spot to really launch this campaign, to really launch this project. And to me, It goes to show that, you know, this is in our DNA, but it's not always going to be if we're not intentional. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's really powerful about, you know, what Just Serve does, is that it's an intentional way to make sure that we are passing down this DNA, this, you know, this frame of mind, this way of life. That this becomes who we are. I think it makes us unique politically as well. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, we've been recognized, and Spencer and I talk to people all over the country and even all over the world, where they say, there's something about Utah. We were just talking to an author, Richard Reeves. He wrote a really incredible book called Of Boys and Men, talking about the issues that we're having with young boys and men who are dropping out of the labor mm-hmm. market, not feeling like there's a place for them in this world, and right. they're gravitating toward different, more destructive things, more destructive political ideologies, all these things. Anyway, he was saying, Utah. There's something about Utah, and it's doing that. And I think it's that.
I couldn't agree more. It's not a panacea. It's not a silver bullet. But the power and the impact of service is truly quite formidable when you see what really occurs, not just in the life of the individual that has served, but quite candidly in the life of the person who did the service, and how powerful an impact that has on them. Your efforts with teachers is phenomenal, and I love seeing what's going on in the schools. And when we can get our youth to serve, it's far more likely they're going to serve as adults. And so the better we can get into that the better we can help our young men and women understand the value of service in their lives, the better off we're going to be. I've got a dear friend who has a couple of boys who struggle with anxiety, but they look forward to their opportunities to go serve because it gets them outside of themselves, and it gives them the opportunity to be able to do something that they wouldn't normally get to do, and they actually enjoy the opportunities.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. It helps with our mental health. It helps with our physical health, all the things. We mm-hmm. all know it's great. There's also, when we talk about Just Serve, and we've kind of mentioned the opportunities that we can find there to serve, maybe just talk a little bit more about the nonprofits or organizations that are needing volunteers.
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that, and thank you. So you're absolutely right. So we're always looking for partnering organizations, and we've got organizations from the very large to United Way, to the very small, and there are any number of them. And we mentioned, you know, Tiny Tim's, which started off small, but he's now grown quite a bit, to everything in between. And so if you have an organization that is in need of volunteers, Just Serve as a great platform to incorporate and engage so that we can help you in your cause or in your effort to find volunteers. Now, a couple of things that we don't do. We don't do political campaigning, nor do we raise money. We don't raise money for people, but we will we can provide all the, well, we can help provide all the volunteers that we can help you find for any particular project you've got. So we've got lots of opportunities out there.
Yeah, it's the perfect way to sort of match volunteers. I get, you know, talking to people all over the state and think, you know, I'd love to get involved. I'd love to do this. You know, they come to, what can I do? And I send them to places like Just Serve to say, you know, there's ways to do this. And, you know, we've used it to find volunteers for our teacher conference. We've used it, you know, our show up organization has used it to find volunteers that we need when we need to plug in. We used it when we were looking to help, you know, find people to sort through the donations that came in for the Ukrainian refugees. We put out a call and there was just warehouse full of, because again, Utahns are, not only do they volunteer, they are very generous in their giving, their resources as well. And we just had an enormous warehouse full of donations that we needed volunteers to sift through. So we used it then, and it's a powerful tool for organizations, for nonprofits, as well as individuals and families. So we love it.
And maybe that brings us full circle because, you know, again, I applaud your efforts. Not only are you promoting the whole idea of service, but you're exemplifying it. And you didn't ask me to say that, but I candidly believe that, you know, this team that you've put together to promote this whole concept is really – really impressive and doing great work.
Well, thank you. We admire your work as well, and we love Just Serve, and we're going to keep working on this together. So I appreciate you being here and talking about it today.
My pleasure.
You can find more information at justserve.org, also mentorsinternational.org and 911day.org. Thanks for being a friend.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.